Amanullah, and God bless you all.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Husseiniye Qumi. Stay tuned.
در سوره مبارکه فاطر
In Surah Al-Fatir, Ayah 37, we read, "They shall cry therein for help. Our Lord, bring us out, so that we may act righteously, differently from what we used to do. Did we not give you a life long enough that one who is heedful might take admonition? And the warner had come to you. Now taste the consequence of your deeds, for the wrongdoers have no helper." The late Shaykh As-Saduq narrates a hadith by Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam in relation to Ayah 37 of Surah Al-Fatir. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, in explaining the term lifelong, states, "Here in this Ayah, lifelong refers to those who are 18 years old. It means that if a person reaches 18 and is still not heedful about the consequences of his deeds, it will be very much difficult for him to be changed after that. So according to Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, the best age to be corrected spiritually is before the age of 18. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Husseiniyye Qumi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight. According to a United Nations report, a market-based focus on short-term profits and economic growth means the wider benefits of nature have been ignored, which has led to bad decisions that have reduced people's well-being and contributed to climate change and nature crises. We now present you an article written by Phoebe Weston. The piece is titled, "UN Report Finds Humans Need to Value Nature as Well as Profits to Survive." A four-year assessment by 82 leading scientists has found, taking into account all the benefits nature provides to humans and redefining what it means to have a good quality of life, is key to living sustainably on Earth. According to a United Nations report, a market-based focus on short-term profits and economic growth means the wider benefits of nature have been ignored, which has led to bad decisions that have reduced people's well-being and contributed to climate change and to nature crisis. To achieve sustainable development, qualitative approaches need to be incorporated into decision-making. According to the report by the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, or IPBES, this means properly valuing the spiritual, cultural, and emotional values that nature brings to humans. The assessment includes more than 13,000 references, including scientific papers and indigenous and local sources of information. It was done in collaboration with experts in social sciences, economics, and humanities. The report builds on the Dasgupta Review, which found the planet is being put at extreme risk by the failure of economists to take account of the true value of nature. The report says incorporating diverse worldviews and knowledge systems will be key to leading to a more sustainable future. Professor Unai Pascual from the Basque Center for Climate Change, who co-chaired the assessment on the diverse values and valuation of nature, said there has been a dominant way of taking decisions based on things that look more simple, super quantitative, and more scientific. And we're saying, no, that's not good science. There are a lot of social sciences and humanities and other knowledge systems that can also tell us how to do things. The review highlights four general perspectives that should be taken into account. Living from nature, which refers to its ability to provide us with our needs like food and material goods. Living with nature, which is the right of non-human life to thrive. Living in nature, which refers to people's right to a sense of place and identity. And finally, living as nature, which treats the world as a spiritual part of being human. Professor Mike Christie of Aberystwyth University's Business School in Wales says the type and quality of information that valuation studies can produce largely depends on how, why, and by whom valuation is designed and applied. He added, this influences whose and which values of nature would be recognized in decisions, and how fairly the benefits and burdens of these decisions would be distributed. There are 50 different methods of approaches of making the value of nature visible in decisions. Yet, researchers found that the way stakeholders valued nature was only taken into account on 2% of the studies. Authors say, moving forward, there are many tools available to make the values of nature visible, and these need to be implemented. One way of working in using citizen assemblies, which reflect the sociology of a given people and gives them a chance to discuss their values, interests, and understandings. There are happening at a national level in a number of countries. One successful example was the Indian government's decision not to mine near the Niamgiri Mountain, which is sacred for the Dongariya Kond people. The intrinsic value of the site for rare species and its cultural and spiritual value to indigenous people was seen as more valuable than the financial gains from mining at the site. Professor Patricia Balvanera of the National Autonomous University of Mexico, who co-chaired the assessment, says there are consequences of not taking other values into account, such as environmental leaders being killed because they had claims to land that have been ignored. Professor Balvanera said the evidence shows that if, from the onset, local values are taken into consideration, people will feel part of the project and will be more on board with whatever was agreed. This entails redefining development and good quality of life and recognizing the multiple ways people relate to each other and to the natural world. The assessment was approved by representatives of 139 countries in the city of Bonn, Germany. Professor Unai Pasquale from the Bas Center for Climate Change said, "The delegates who endorsed this report say this is a game changer. They realize we've been going through a way of understanding nature in a too narrow sense, and that has brought us to this situation where we live in a planet with interconnected crises. This report is one ingredient out of many which will be needed to convince very powerful stakeholders and decision makers to start changing the way they treat nature." The Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystems Service, or IPBES, which is the equivalent of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, for biodiversity, was set up to provide governments across the world with scientific advice on how to protect nature. Recently, it released another report that found wild species support half of the world's population, but their future use is threatened by over-exploitation. It comes ahead of the Convention on Biological Diversity, or CBD, COP15 in Montreal in Canada in December, which will set the next decade of nature targets, and authors say the findings should provide a valuable contribution to the process. Elizabeth Maruma Marema, Executive Secretary of the Convention on Biological Diversity, or CBD, says, "I applaud the work of all IPBES experts for this and look forward to its active use by all parties and stakeholders to the convention." The relationship between humans and nature is under intense and increasing strain. The report released recently by the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, and akin to the IPCC report on climate change, provides compelling evidence that humans are overexploiting wild species and habitats. Harmful activities, including habitat destruction, poor farming practices and pollution, have altered ecosystems significantly, driving many species past the point of recovery. In Britain alone, of the 8,431 species assessed in the 2019 State of Nature report, 1,188 are threatened with extinction. Globally, there are an estimated 1 million species at risk, with biodiversity declining at a faster rate than at any time in human history. We cannot ignore biodiversity loss. Biodiversity is the variability that exists among all living organisms, between different species, within species including genetic makeup, and in wider ecosystems. Billions of people rely on wild species for food, clean water, energy, income, and health and well-being. Annually, crops worth up to £480 billion are pollinated by a variety of wild animals, and an estimated 4 billion people depend on natural medicines for their healthcare. These vital ecosystem services are fundamentally based on a healthy environment, and this requires biodiversity. Losing biodiversity leaves species and ecosystems less resilient to challenges, such as invasive species or pests, meaning there is an increased risk of whole populations being wiped out and destabilizing the entire ecological network. Nature is a finite resource, and human self-interest alone should determine that biodiversity must be protected. Alongside overexploitation, humans are driving biodiversity loss by destroying, polluting, and fragmenting habitats across the globe. Many of Britain's most important peatlands, which provide a home for rare species such as the hen harrier, have been drained for agricultural use. The Amazon rainforest in South America is being cleared to such an extent that it may be near a tipping point beyond which it cannot recover.
حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala Ahli Baytihi al-Tayyibin al-Tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And we came to understand that from the 16th sermon that Imam Ali alayhi salam presented to the people when he was just taking up the authority, where now he was giving his maiden speech, where now he's trying to give his strategy, Imam Ali alayhi salam comes up and quickly tries to remind the people and show them the problem that is there in front of him, the difficulty that is ahead of him, and what he needs to do. And this is the sign of a true leader, that he clearly pinpoints that mistake that the society is going through in the most wise of manners, and then he shows a strategy that to fight against that. Though that strategy that he wants to apply would be the actual reason why he would have to give up his life and suffer and be murdered and martyred by the people. But he had to do that. Imam Ali alayhi salam was Imam Ali alayhi salam. He was al-haqqu aliyun ma'al-haqq ma'al-haqq wal-haqqu ma'ali. He was a person who was with the truth and the truth was in him. So it was not possible that Imam Ali needed to do the right thing at the right time, at the right place. And now the strategy of Imam Ali alayhi salam was to tell them that, look, that system that you're following right now is a redundant old age system of ignorance. Now you need a new system that I'm going to present to you. And that was what was going to shake the community severely.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are talking about the strategy that Imam Ali alayhi salam had in mind. So first, Imam Ali prepares the minds and tells them that, O people, based on my understanding of the past and my analysis of today, I am telling you that whatever mistakes the previous communities did, do not repeat them, because those mistakes that they did had an effect, and that effect is common. It will affect you also today if you repeat those mistakes. So I am telling you that I know how you are before the coming of the Prophet, and you know that also. I know how you are, and you know how you are. You are under a tyrannical system. You are in the yoke of ignorance. you are confined in oppression and suppression. And O people of Islam, today also, you are like that. My analysis tells me that you have gone back, you have backtracked, you are in the same situation. Now, if you are in the same situation like the previous people, what happened to the previous people? The previous generations, that means that generation before the coming of Islam, those who held on to those redundant social systems and those weak and fraudulent social orders, they fell down and were crushed with those social systems. But those who held on to the true Islam, they were saved. So now I'm telling you, O people, today, if you want to hold on to these systems before I came, that means the systems that were in place by the Muslim leaders before me, then know that if you continue with those systems, you are going to be crushed by those systems, those social systems, those social orders, those governing principles of the previous redundant leaders. You will face the same problem today. So I am telling you, O people, that beware of this situation. So what am I going to do as Imam Ali alayhi salam? What is my duty as a leader? My duty is that I am going to change those previous systems. Because if I don't change those previous systems, they are going to drown. You're going to drown down with them because they are redundant. They are meant to be destroyed. They are meant for destruction. And you will get destroyed with them. So what am I going to do? I'm going to change those systems. And that's going to be very severely difficult for you.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. So now we are seeing that Imam Ali's strategy is to create a revolution, kind of, to change those social systems that have come back, those social orders, those redundant social orders. And now when you want to change those social orders, it's not going to be easy because then there will be a lot of problems. People are going to face difficulties. And that is why Imam Ali alayhi salam says, لَتُبَلْبَلُنَّ بَلْبَلَةً, that you are going to face difficulties. You will be shaken severely. لَتُغَرْبَلُنَّ غَرْبَلَةً. There will be severe shaking. There will be a sifting process. There will be a very bad sifting process, a very difficult sifting process, because there is no choice. That is my strategy. You have ended up having a social order that is redundant. So I need to change that social order. وَلَتُسَاطُنَّ سَوْتَ الْقِدَرِ. And just like how you can see how when there's a pot with some boiling heated material, how things inside it are bubbling and turning around here and there. That's how I'm going to change things. حَتَّى يَعُودَ أَسْفَلُكُمْ أَعْلَاكُمْ. Until those that are under come above, وَعَلَاكُمْ أَسْفَلَكُمْ, and those who are above will come below. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to change that order, the order which is existing today. O people, those who have been sleeping and resting out of adamance and not want to change your ways, لَتُبَلْبَلُنَّ بَلْبَلَةً, there'll be a lot of difficulties. There'll be a change, a very vast change that's going to affect you. I'm going to destroy those and change the way you have arranged yourself, that structure that you have placed in front, that redundant one. I'm going to change that class system that you have made. What type of class system have you made for yourselves, whereby there are certain people who are rich, certain people who are, let's say, because they are generals, army generals, or because they are some veterans, they have special preference over others and unequal opportunity of wealth and knowledge apart from everyone. How can that be? That is unacceptable. And that is why Imam Ali alayhi salam came for that, to change the system and to rejuvenate life into the Muslim Ummah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome. on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه السلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام الوفاء لأهل الغدر غدر عند الله والغدر بأهل الغدر وفاء عند الله.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "Faithfulness with faithless people is faithlessness with Allah, while faithlessness with faithless people is faithfulness with Allah.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. Dear friends, in the beautiful and universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, we find that His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali, alayhi salam, has these words of wisdom which have been able to surpass time and age. It is interesting and truly amazing at the same time that an individual can say something, or there can be a statement or a phrase from a certain individual, and that statement and that phrase can continue to live for over 1,000 years. If it wasn't for holy books like the Holy Quran, we would surely have lost the words and the statements of the people of the past who lived upon this earth over 1,000 years ago. But as far as history is concerned and the historical texts are concerned, we find that there is no remnant of individuals such as Pharaoh or Nimrud. But the Quran has saved these statements of these individuals, all so that we may reflect, think, comprehend and understand, and eventually make a change in our lives. Imam Ali alayhi salam talking about an individual who cannot be relied upon, an individual who is not the inheritor of the knowledge of prophets and imams. Of course, one who is the inheritor of the knowledge of the prophets and the imams must be somebody who can be relied upon. But here, Imam Ali alayhi salam teaches us and tells us and describes for us one who cannot be relied upon. Imam Ali says that the one that cannot be relied upon is one who will exploit the religion for worldly gains, and by virtue of Allah's favors upon that individual who cannot be relied upon will domineer over the people. And through Allah's pleasure, they would lord over Allah's devotees. We must be very careful as individuals, as a society, as a community, and as nations, that we do not bring to power via so-called democracy people who cannot be relied upon, people who will lead us astray, people who will misguide us, people who will take advantage of us, plunder and loot our hard-earned wealth, destroy our spirituality. And these kind of individuals are who? Imam Ali, over 1,000 years ago, gave us some descriptions. He said that these individuals that cannot be relied upon, that cannot be trusted in positions of power, are those who will exploit the religion for worldly gain. They will domineer and become authoritarian over the people, and they will try to lord over the devotees of Allah. Another beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits his supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by Thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
تبقي عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Here we have an imam who would teach us and say famously, people are of two kinds, الناس صنفان, أما أخ لك في الدين, أو نظير لك في الخلق. People are either your brothers in faith or equals in humanity. When it comes to spirituality, the immense values of his du'as and his communication with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the wonderful words that are immensely powerful when you and I recite them in Munajat. When it comes to his brilliant courage and his valor, and the fact that he was the most important companion of the Holy Prophet of Islam in every single battle. The fact that he would always be thinking about Islam first, then himself. About the well-being of others, then himself. Ali ibn Abi Talib was a man of God, a man chosen by Allah, dedicated his life to Allah, was martyred for Allah, and today a visitor who comes here pays their respect to Ali ibn Abi Talib, seeks that goal of being close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, serving Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, being of ibadullah, just as perfectly as the commander of the faithful, Ali ibn Abi Talib, indeed was.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
President Biden has almost unlimited ways of communicating with the world, but he opted to pen an article posted online Saturday night by the Washington Post to defend his pending West Asia trip in light of the controversies around it. In the piece, he speaks about many issues, including further integrating Israel into the region, Washington's ties with Riyadh, the Saudi-led war in Yemen, the Iran nuclear deal, and more. While most of the matters mentioned in the article are centered around West Asia, they also seem to share another point. The US itself is either complicit in or directly responsible for the very issues it claims that it is trying to solve.
The US lies through its teeth without stopping a minute. We've seen the debates and discussions about the comprehensive agreement with Iran, which they had promised to renegotiate, and they seem not to be negotiating in good faith. They're trying to paint themselves as innocent, which of course they are not, and they just had a recent rebuff at the G20 meeting in Indonesia, where Mr. Blinken refused to sit down with the leaders of all these states.
Saudi Arabia, infamous for its violations of human rights and under widespread criticism for its bloody war on Yemen as well as the killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, is a focal point of Biden's West Asia tour. But despite this, the US president's framing of the Saudi relationship appeared particularly defensive. During his election campaign, Biden had pledged of making Saudi Arabia a pariah for its crime. But now he has ironically claimed that ties with Riyadh help promote the US's foreign policy ambitions. Similar to the other issues, the US president also tried to take fault away from his administration in regard to the Iran nuclear program file by putting the blame on Iran. Biden also stated his readiness to further pressure Tehran despite Tehran's readiness to return to the deal, and this too sheds light on the US's ironical foreign policy. One of the main purposes of Joe Biden's visit is the sought deepening of Israel's integration in the region and moving forwards with the Abraham Accords, which is the pillar of normalization deals with Israel. But the latter has raised questions regarding Biden's foreign policies, as Israel itself seems to be the source of the problem in the region, from its atrocities against Palestinians to its continuous attacks on Syria and its repeated threats against Iran. In the op-ed piece, President Biden says the U.S. helped end the 2021 war on Gaza, but fails to condemn Israel for its atrocities and violation of Palestinian rights. Biden also proudly mentions the U.S.'s $4 billion support of Israel. But what does all this demonstrate about the U.S.'s stance on Palestinians who have been subject to Israeli brutality for years now?
Well, the issue of the United States and Israel is a burning issue right now, and the U.S. has acted in a hypocritical way where Russia has attacked special military operation in Ukraine to denazify it, and we know what Nazis are. So, and yet, so the U.S. has spent $40 or $60 billion arming these countries, letting all those Ukrainian youth be killed who were forced into fighting Russia, and yet, with respect to Gaza, 8 months earlier, Israel unleashed a horrible attack on Gaza, and the U.S. hummed and hawed, tried to sort of say, maybe we'll calm things down. They didn't spend $40 billion to arm the resistance against Israel. And that is a term which I call tongue-in-cheek. I don't know whether you know the term. It's sort of a sarcastic term because obviously the U.S. is not going to do that. But it's related to empire.
The U.S.'s one-sided stance on Israel is also clearly demonstrated in the Shirin Abu Akleh case, where it stopped short of reaching a definitive conclusion in her killing by Israeli troops, while all other investigations reached the conclusion that the regime troops did in fact murder her. Now, despite Israeli crimes, Washington seeks not only to integrate the regime further into the region, but also aims to advance its plans to upgrade defense cooperation between Israel and Arabs in the light of the Abraham Accords. And all this raises the question of whether the U.S. truly seeks justice and advocates for human rights, or it only claims to do so in order to move forward with its agenda. After spending his first year and a half in office mostly trying to avoid deeper engagement in West Asia while prioritizing challenges at home and in other parts of the world such as China and Russia, President Biden seems to be making a slight shift towards dedicating more time and attention to West Asia. One of the main purposes of Joe Biden's visit is the so-called deepening of Israel's integration in the region and moving forward with the Abraham Accords, which is the main pillar of normalization deals with Israel. But the latter has raised questions regarding Biden's foreign policies, as Israel itself seems to be the source of the problem in the region, from its atrocities against Palestinians to its continuous attacks on Syria and its repeated threats against Iran.
Well, Israel has been the problem in the Middle East since their inception. And even before that, when they were under British occupation, Palestine was under British occupation, the Zionists were the cause of the problems in the Middle East, going back to the bombing of the King David Hotel. So Israel has been a really terrible neighbor for all of the surrounding countries to them. You mentioned Syria. Yes, I was in Syria several times when Israel was being the aggressor and actively bombing the Syrian people who've done nothing to them. They occupy Syrian territory in the Golan Heights. Israel has been just a terrible neighbor to everyone. They've been abusive of the Palestinian people. I've been to the Palestinian, what they call camps, refugee camps, and these are 70 years old now. These are not new. These are established communities that they refer to as camps. They drove the people off their land. They stole their land that they have no right and no claim to. So yes, Israel is the nexus of the problem in the Middle East.
Now, despite Israeli crimes, Washington seems to not only integrate the regime further into the region, it also aims to advance its plan to upgrade defense cooperation between Israel and the Arabs in the light of the Abraham Accords. Meanwhile, Iran has reiterated that normalization of relations between some Arab countries and Israel encourages and strengthens the regime to continue its crimes. President Ebrahim Raisi in April even compared friendship with Israel to keeping a snake in proximity. Americans have been feeling the economic pressure of inflation in recent months, with surging domestic gasoline prices adding to that burden. There are expectations that President Biden's trip to Saudi Arabia will include a direct request from the kingdom to increase its oil production in the hopes of offsetting the rising costs for American consumers at the pump. During his campaign, Biden had pledged of making Saudi Arabia a pariah. But now, in a move seen by rights advocates as at odds with his promise to put human rights at the heart of U.S. foreign policy, Biden is set to meet with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as he struggles to combat record-high U.S. gasoline prices.
Biden has done some very foolish economic policies in the U.S. Initially, like day one after his inauguration, he cut off the Keystone Pipeline. And he turned the United States from an oil exporting country into an oil importing country. What Biden was not counting on was the rest of the world is sanctioning the U.S. and not wanting to deal in dollars, and they're not wanting to supply the U.S. with commodities and or finished goods. So Biden's economic policies have been an unmitigated failure. And so, yes, Biden is going to Saudi Arabia to beg the Saudis to increase oil production.
Meanwhile, the United States is facing accusations of whitewashing the Israeli killing of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh after concluding the bullet that killed her likely came from Israeli military gunfire, but stopping short of reaching a definitive conclusion in her killing. Abu Akleh was wearing a press uniform while reporting on an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank when she was fatally shot in the head on May 11th. Since the killing, several media and human rights organizations have all determined that the Israeli military killed Abu Akleh. All this raises the question of whether the U.S. truly seeks justice and advocates for human rights, or it only claims to do so in order to move forward with its agenda.
The United Nations has warned the Israeli regime against forcible mass eviction of over 1,000 Palestinians from their homes in the Masafer Yatta area of the occupied West Bank.
Evictions that lead to displacement, if enforced, amount to forced deportation and a grave breach of the forced Geneva Convention, and therefore constitute a war crime.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs added that the international humanitarian law imposes an absolute prohibition on the forcible transfer of civilians from or within the occupied Palestinian territories, and that Israeli authorities must put an end to all coercive measures, including planned evictions, demolitions, and military training in it.
Well, the Palestinians have been periodically rising up against this ongoing slow-motion Zionist genocide. It's been going on now. The Palestinians have been resisting this genocide for more than a century since it began, when these settlers started swarming into Palestine against the wishes of the Palestinian people. And so that struggle will, of course, continue. And there will be continuing protests. There are basically ongoing peaceful protests in Palestine. And every now and then, the uprising becomes more of a military nature. And then, of course, the Zionists respond in kind, and all kinds of blood is shed. At the end of the day, the Zionists are continuing their slow-motion genocide, but it isn't happening fast enough to save them. In the long run, the Zionist entity is doomed because it hasn't been able to get the actual acquiescence of the Palestinians, first and foremost, and then secondarily, the people of the region.
A ruling by the Israeli Supreme Court on May 4th allowed for the mass eviction of Palestinians in the area. The Israeli military has designated part of the area as a closed military zone for training, and the regime has sought to remove the communities on this basis. The the European ambassador.